Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Action Park Media.
Hi, I'm Ethan Suplee. Welcome to American Glutton. Outside of acting, my two favorite things to do are diet and eat. I have a very complicated relationship with food, and on this podcast, we're going to talk about all of it. Food as entertainment. Food as sport. Food as fuel. I'll talk to experts and the average person, just like you and me.
I hate to ask you to do anything, but if you're enjoying the show, please take a moment to like, subscribe, rate, review, all of the above on whatever app you're getting it from. Today on American Glutton, I'm happy to welcome Mark Bittman. He's a New York Times best-selling author, food journalist, and columnist. He is also the special advisor on food policy at Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health. We're going to talk about his latest book, Animal Vegetable Junk. You can find Mark on Instagram at Mark Bittman. Mark Bittman, welcome to the American Glutton podcast.
It's great to be here.
I have a lot of various questions for you about everything. I want to talk about your book.
The most recent book is called Animal Vegetable Junk, and that's mostly what we've been talking about.
Animal Vegetable Junk. I mean, that sounds amazing.
Okay. I mean, yeah. Okay.
Are these rated in, are these listed out in some kind of rating, like animal, it comes before vegetable? Like what are the priorities here?
Well, really, it's, you know, it's a catchy title, but it's a description of the relationship between humans and agriculture going back for millennia. And obviously, animals and plants were our first foods. Agriculture began 10,000 years ago, but junk was really only introduced into our diet 150 years ago or so. And it's where all of our problems began. Or it's, our problems didn't necessarily begin with junk, but our problems began with the agriculture that produces junk. And junk has a whole series of public health problems of its own that are, you know, that are mostly well known. So the title is a description of where we were with agriculture, with eating and agriculture, where we are with eating and agriculture, and where we need to be going with eating and agriculture. That's where the book is at.
I can't imagine what junk food was like 150 years ago. Do you have examples of that in the book, like where it's first appeared?
I mean, 150 is a bit of a stretch. 140, you have white bread, packaged white bread. But 140 years ago, sort of saw the invention of Coca-Cola. A couple other things too that are not coming to mind, but there's no better example than Coke. And that was late 19th century. So 125 to 150 years ago. And that's kind of the paradigm. I mean, if you want to talk about it, it's candy bar in liquid form, just straight sugar in liquid form. And nothing really could be much worse for you than, and still call itself a food than that.
Right. And not to get us in super deep legal trouble or anything like that, but Coca-Cola, at its advent, had cocaine in it, right? I mean, that's the myth that I hear.
Yeah, I think it did. But, you know, Coca-Cola now has caffeine in it, which is every bit as addictive. I mean, you know, there are some percentage of people in the United States that start their day with a cola beverage, not necessarily Coke, could be Pepsi or Dr. Pepper or Mountain Dew, which is not a cola, but also has caffeine, but start their day with a sugar sweetened beverage that has caffeine in it instead of coffee. The major difference being that most people don't put 9 teaspoons of sugar in their coffee. I'm sure some do, but... Most don't.
I mean, if you're going to sit and do that on your own, that is a big commitment.
Right. Well, I mean, that's the interesting thing about junk food, or one of the many interesting things about junk food, is that you can't really make it on your own. And if you could, you probably wouldn't have the conscience to do it. I mean, it's a good point. If you took an average size mug of coffee and sat there and put 9 teaspoons of sugar in it, A, it would be so sweet you couldn't possibly drink it. And B, you'd freak out. You'd be like,
what am I doing?
What am I doing here? 4, 5, 6, 7. You know, I mean, what?
Yeah, I get completely perplexed going to get coffee. I don't make particularly good coffee. So if, for say, my wife is out of town, or even my children make better coffee than I do, and they go to
school, I could teach you how to make good coffee if you want.
We'll talk about that later. Yeah, we've had pour over. We've had the thing where you just have a little capsule of coffee, and somehow that makes coffee. I screw it up no matter what. So I tend to, on my own, go out for coffee. And the thing that is so shocking to me is the milkshakes for breakfast that people like, which to me is even beyond like a Coke. I can't imagine drinking a Coke to start my day, but imagining a Coke with ice cream at like one of these corporate coffee places where there's like, now it's drizzled and whipped cream and everything else, and they've created a bigger lid to cram everything that sits on top of it in there. This is a wild thing in modernity, you know?
Yeah, it is a wild thing. And it's true. It's funny if you think about starting your day with a root beer float. That's kind of what you're looking at. I mean, yeah. There's no regulation. There's no morality. There's no consciousness around this stuff. They will sell whatever they can sell, regardless of the consequences. And people do like sugar. We are hardwired to eat sugar, and it's also got addictive qualities to it. So if, you know, Starbucks, McDonald's, Dunkin' Donuts, anybody, they will market the hell out of sugar, and people will eat it. And, you know, people can only eat what's out there. And we all know we're brought up.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
The 50s, at least, we have all been brought up in the presence of sugar sweetened beverages, of sugar sweetened cereals, of ice cream everywhere. David Kessler, former FDA commissioner, calls the United States a food carnival. And that's really what it is. It's like you're walking down a midway and people are selling you funnel cakes. Thinking of funnel cakes. And we all have trouble resisting that stuff because we grew up being taught that it was a treat, and we grew up relishing it, and we grew up enjoying it. And that becomes a habit that shapes your food preferences. So we all know how difficult it is. You can walk into Starbucks with all the best intentions of getting a black drip coffee, and you can find yourself walking out with a Frappuccino. And the same is true with McDonald's, and the same is true with every place. They will tell you that there are healthy choices, but really almost all the choices are unhealthy, and we all have trouble resisting. I mean, we all do better resisting that stuff sometimes than we do others, but we all break down from time to time, and some of us more often than others. And the fact that junk food is just omnipresent every single place, it makes it really a challenge for most of us.
Yeah. You know, even at, I remember I was recently in a Staples or something like that. You know, it's an office store. I was getting paper for a printer and checking out, there was candy at the checkout. And I was just like, this is wild how it is. You cannot go anywhere and not right. be confronted with some of this stuff.
I wonder if Staples even has a candy aisle or a snack aisle, because, you know, under this sort of logic that, well, if you're shopping for your office, there's always office snacks. I mean, yeah, it is omnipresent. And, you know, I keep saying I'm going to do this, and I'm going to try to do it. I would like to walk down the aisles of a regular supermarket with my camera and just videotape just the back and forth of it, because statistically 60% of the calories sold in the United States are from ultra processed food. And if you go to it, and that's equivalent to junk food. And if you go to a supermarket and you walk up and down the aisles and you pay attention, that's what you'll see. We think of supermarkets, you know, they want to give us the impression of you walk in, there's this beautiful produce section, and there is. And then there's the dairy and there's the meat and there's, but that's really kind of it. And even the produce section and the dairy and the meat sections are inundated with junk food. So, and then the rest of the aisles are, there's the chips aisle and there's the soda aisle and there's the candy aisle and there's the cookie aisle and there's the breakfast cereal aisle. Every one of those foods is bad for you. Every one of those foods is made from sort of the same two or three ingredients beaten to a pulp and ultra processed, as we say, and usually with a ton of added sugar.
Yeah, I even, you know, I we don't drink a lot of juice. I do have a daughter with type 1 diabetes. So in our household, we think of juice as like a medicinal thing. If her blood sugar drops, the juice is used to raise her blood sugar quickly. Mm-hmm. That's why it's here. But I remember watching a program on how, you know, 100% orange juice is made. And like, it goes through a process where it's got no resemblance to juice at all. They've taken the oranges, they've basically turned them into water, then they've chemically processed the peels to reconcentrate the flavor of juice and added it back in. And it's just this bizarre thing to wind up with juice, which is also...
You know, I don't know that story. I'll have to look at that. That's interesting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you can find fresh squeezed juice at the grocery store, but the majority of the juices, when you look at, and it says 100, you know, I'm not going to out any of these companies, but you know, it's in a cardboard carton that gets pasteurized. It's turned into basically sterile water. And then the peels are used to be chemically manipulated, and the sugar is separated, all gets separated and then recombined to create this thing that's called pure juice. It's a really 100% bizarre,
pure juice. That's interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
I remember talking about, you know, going into a place and winding up with going in for a coffee and winding up with a milkshake. And it was started me thinking about milkshakes. One of the points for me, I have a lot of memories of personal lows and points that I reflect on when I'm tempted to get off track, because I've been fairly on track for a number of years now and successfully doing that. And it was, you know, going to an In-N-Out, which I at the time thought of as the healthy fast food, right?
Right.
Because
right.
you watch them chop the potatoes up before they fried them. That was it.
Yeah, there was a time that In-N-Out was really had a good reputation.
Yeah, it was. You know, it was like the it wasn't organic ever, but that's how I thought. It was like the Whole Foods of fast
right,
food.
Right, right.
And they sold these tiny little milkshakes, but they sold gigantic, you know, liters of soda. And I was trying to convince the girl to sell me 4 milkshakes in one giant soda container. And she just absolutely wouldn't do it. And I said, I'll pay for the soda. I'll pay for all four milkshakes. I just need you to dump them in there so I don't create a mess in my car. And she would not do it. And I was so angry at her. And later I was kind of like, no, I think she probably did, you know, what was morally correct for her and the right store. But aren't the portions a big factor in this? Like, I think of, you said we're hardwired. And I think that that's really true, because I think for the longest time, when a human being came in contact with sugar, it was in the form of like seasonal fruit.
And, yeah, absolutely.
And our bodies went, we need to eat as much of this as we can to store it for later use. And so now that it's so abundant, I don't know that we've evolved out of that, or if we can evolve out of that, or how that's going to work.
Well, I think we have to evolve out of that. We haven't. And that, you know, that's what the sugar, sweetened beverage, and other industries dependent on sugar as a major ingredient are taking advantage of. Is when I was a kid, a soda was 7 ounces. I mean, a bottle of Coke was 7 ounces. And now the smallest size Coke you can get in like a McDonald's is maybe 12 or maybe 16. And, you know, a bottle is 12 or 16 or sometimes 20, and a can is 12 or 16. And the common thing is to buy a 2-liter bottle for 99 cents, which is just, you know, an unbelievable bargain. I mean, it's just incredibly cheap. But sugar is cheap, and high fructose corn syrup is even cheaper. So they will put as much of it in there as they can get you to consume. And again, we like the taste, that we are hardwired to enjoy sweet things. And there is a way in which it's the more the merrier.
Does subsidization play some role in this? I'm not a historian, and I don't know exactly how this works, but I believe that it was like coming out of the Great Depression, when there was legitimate famine in this country, that you started to see subsidization programs roll out, and that seems to have led to a giant boom in all of this.
Well, actually, it's earlier than that, and in a very real way, the United States was founded on growing not just sugar, but commodity crops in general. And the government always encouraged that, encouraged people to grow cash crops, sell those, and use the money to support themselves, rather than to say, let's create a network of farms that grow a wide variety of food so that we can all eat well. That was never really a consideration in this country. And the subsidies really began after World War I, when prices fell and the government wanted to encourage farmers to continue to grow. At that time, it was wheat. And then later, corn was subsidized and soybeans. It's not so much direct subsidies. I mean, direct subsidies matter for sure. But in the last 50, 75 years, the whole infrastructure has grown up around the production of mostly corn. I mean, corn is by far our number one crop. And a lot of sugar comes from corn in the form of high fructose corn syrup, which was really only invented in the 70s. It's only 50 years old. But it's not so much direct subsidies, although direct subsidies do exist. I don't want to say they don't, but it's also that everything in the system is geared toward making those crops and the processing of those crops the easiest, most profitable thing, especially for big farmers. And most farmers are big farmers at this point, because there's been a period of consolidation in the last, again, 50 to 100 years. So you could go to Iowa and you can grow anything in that soil. Iowa used to be, I think, the second leading producer of tomatoes in the United States, the leading producer of apples. I mean, you can grow. It's beautiful, beautiful farmland. But you talk to farmers and they'll tell you that even if they want to grow oats, or even if they want to grow rye, which are, you know, could not be that much different from growing corn or soybeans. They're row crops. You can grow them by the acre. This system, the whole infrastructure is geared toward bringing corn to the grain elevator. And the trucks are there to pick up corn, and the grain elevator is set to weigh the corn, and the grain elevator is set to store the corn and ship the corn. It's corn and soybeans. Even if you try to grow a different kind of grain, it's just discouraged. It's not actively discouraged. It makes your life harder, and you're going to make less money. So if you're going to try to switch from growing corn to growing tomatoes, or growing a variety of row crops, it's just, you're going to be a small farmer. And there are people who are doing that. But for a family who's used to farming 3,000 acres of corn and making a living doing that, having the equipment, having the relationships, having a system down, to make that transition, doesn't matter whether it's subsidized, it's kind of the only way to go.
Right.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
I mean, it's subsidized. It does matter that it's subsidized. But what I mean to say is, it doesn't matter that it's directly subsidized. Like, here's $5 for every acre of corn you grow. It's like, if you're going to grow anything else, your life is going to be so hard, you're not going to make any money at all.
Right.
So there's just like so many different incentives to grow corn and soybeans and wheat, and so many disincentives to grow almost anything else.
I understand. I think mostly what corn is used for, it's used in part for ethanol, right? And it feeds the cows.
Yep.
We're largely feeding cattle on corn, and high fructose corn syrup, which is kind of in anything you think of as sweet nowadays.
Or even many things you think of as not sweet. I mean,
right.
Let me interrupt you for a second.
No,
I'm sorry. Because you're absolutely right. It's about a third of the corn grown is used for ethanol. About a third is used for animal feed. And it's not just cows, it's pigs and chickens as well. And about a third is used not just for high fructose corn syrup, but for junk food in general. But a lot of that is in the form of high fructose corn syrup. And you know, you don't think of tomato sauce as sweet. You don't think of salad dressing as sweet. There's a host of things you don't think of as sweet that have sugar or high fructose corn syrup snuck into them.
Right.
So, I mean, I did interrupt you. So,
no, I appreciate it a lot, because I would never, ever assume that tomato sauce had that in it, you know, but
one of them does. You just have a look. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is also wild. I'm not so clear on what soy is used for, because I associate soy with, like, I'm eating edamame, which I think are soybeans, if I go to have sushi, or tofu. But what else is that used for?
Yeah, I mean, edamame and tofu is like saying corn is used for corn on the cob. I mean, it's such a small percentage of it. I mean, most of it, first of all, there's a tremendous amount of cooking oil that's made from soy. Soy is the other half of the animal feed equation. So it's corn and soy.
Okay.
So I don't know exact percentages on soybeans, and the crop is smaller, although it's huge, smaller than the corn crop. But I would guess that a higher percentage of soybeans is used for animal feed than corn, and a higher percentage is used for cooking oil than corn. But that soy protein is in every processed food, all the fake meat, anything that you might, all sort of all kind of heat and eat kind of foods that are composed foods, or like pressed nuggets or that kind of stuff. It's all, there's tons and tons of soy in those products.
Right. Yeah, it becomes, when I think one of the biggest changes I made, and it involved literally like things as basic as taking different routes home at night to avoid the temptation of fast food, but was really just to, and without without the names, like I know there's like paleo and Whole 30 and a bunch of different diets that encourage eating whole foods. But even without that, like going to the supermarket, staying on the periphery, because once you make your way inside, it's all basically processed. But I think just for me, which my biggest goal was weight loss, and for a lot of people I talk to who have similar goals, I think there can be nothing better than to take a break at least from this kind of processed food and have some separation, see how you feel, see how your body reacts to eating foods that don't have a ton of ingredients.
I mean, I think that's really smart. You mentioned my book, Vegan Before Six, which, as I said, is about 10 years old, but that was a period where I'd come to the same conclusion. And the book is 10 years old, but I started eating that way 5 years before that. But the idea was we just need to step away from junk food. We need to step away from animal products. And it doesn't mean eliminating them. But for most of us, there's because of the availability and the omnipresence of that kind of destructive food, it's hard for people to say, okay, I'm going to eat a good diet. But, you know, as we were talking about before, you walk into that Starbucks and you think, oh, Frappuccino sounds really great. So I made this rule for myself back then that I was going to eat a very strict diet of only plants, as close to natural as possible. No white food, no junk food, no animal products every day from time I woke up until 6 o'clock at night. And then I would allow myself to eat pretty much whatever I wanted to for dinner. And my diet changed tremendously. I lost a lot of weight. All my numbers went in the right direction and so on and so on. Pretty much what you'd expect. And I don't really think it matters how you do that, how you eat less junk food, how you eat more whole foods, more especially plants, pure animal products. Those are the keys to a good diet. There's not much more to it than that. However you do it is right. But for so many people, especially people who eat most of their meals on the road or through takeout or drive-thrus or whatever, it's really, really hard because the temptations are just always there. It's much easier if you can stay home, if you can cook for yourself, if you can shop for yourself, if you can avoid buying potato chips, ice cream, et cetera, and not even have that stuff in the house. It makes it much, much easier. But for so many people, it's just impossible because we're eating from the drive-thru.
Yeah, I think that what you're touching on is the key, because I know for myself, when I'm away from home, even on a travel day, I now take my food with me. It becomes so difficult to eat pretty much anywhere. Even at a restaurant, I don't really trust what's going into the food.
Right.
And I'll consider that like a diet break if I have to do that. I have become very much responsible for everything that goes into my body. And when I say that, I mean like the difference between going from eating without thought to eating with a lot of thought into it is I found that the volume of food increases so much when you remove the processing from it that I'm never hungry anymore.
Right.
And I'm actually on a diet, which is completely counterintuitive, or was counterintuitive for me. I would be scared. I think I'd have to read your book, because if I think if I eat just a vegan diet before six, I'm going for French fries and, you know, grilled cheese sandwiches made with, you know, nut cheese or something like this. And I know that that's not what you're saying, because that's.
Yeah, I'm actually saying no processed food. So no French fries and no fake cheese sandwiches. I think it's important to remember that vegan doesn't mean good. It means an absence of meat. It doesn't mean the presence of good whole foods. And I think that it's important you know, to add as close to natural form as possible. We want to be eating, you know, vegetables, fruits, nuts, seeds, and so on, but we want to be eating them in their natural form. We don't want to be eating fake meat, fake cheese, French fries. Coke is vegan for that matter. So the word vegan doesn't preclude junk, and the word organic doesn't preclude junk. So you have to be careful about saying, oh, I eat all organic, or oh, I'm a vegan. Doesn't necessarily mean you have a good diet.
Yeah. I made this mistake when I was, you know, in my search for the diet that worked best for me. I did the 4-Hour Body by Tim Ferriss. And he had, like, I believe at one point it was even like, if you're doing well, you can have 2 cheat days or a full cheat day. This was a total disaster for me, because if you take any regulation away, I can cram 12,000 calories into a day and it's all processed. And you don't even realize you're eating, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
So I think
it's funny. I've been a runner for most of my life, and I often feel it's easier to run every day than it is to run 2 days out of 3, because as soon as you take time off, you lose your rhythm. And it's the same thing with eating. It's easier to eat well all the time than to do. I mean, I find intermittent fasting incredibly challenging. I've tried it. Vegan before 6 is a form of intermittent fasting, but I mean, it really is whatever works for you as an individual. We all know what our weaknesses are, but I agree with you that in a way, setting some kind of...
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Standards for yourself, some group of rules for yourself, not really making any exceptions is the easiest, in a way, thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. For I think the biggest thing that I have gotten away from is, like, I love your analogy and the picture you paint, where like the food scheme in America is the carnival, because I was constantly entertaining myself with food, and it's one of those things where if you do something that much, it no longer has its allure. There's no, you're just becoming numb, you know, like, what are the few things in life I really like to eat? Delicious things. I can still eat delicious things. They are more delicious when I'm not numbing myself with an over-inundation with sugar and fat and things that are so concentrated. So it's been a good trade-off for me, and I couldn't agree more. To staying away from processed foods is, you know, has changed the paradigm entirely for myself.
Right. Just trying to think of, you know, I started this podcast of my own about 2-3 months ago called Food with Mark Bittman. And so I've talked to, you know, a dozen people like this for a long time. ranging from Ted Danson, Nigella Lawson, Moby. We've had some food people on, Tom Colicchio, and some non-food people. But whenever we get around to talking about diet, it's kind of the same conversation. People have their own set of rules. They do it their own way, but they all know what direction. I mean, these are, you know, these are smart, well-educated people. Everybody knows what direction they need to be taking their diet in, and everybody struggles with it. Almost everybody struggles with it because we've all grown up in a society where we've been encouraged to eat junk. We've been encouraged to eat high fat, super sweet, highly processed foods. But, you know, everybody you talk to is working on it. Everybody, almost everybody you talk to is working on it.
Yeah, I don't know a single person from very, very fit people to very obese people that doesn't have some portion of their attention stuck on this from time to time, or if not constantly. It is really amazing. I think it becomes overwhelming with the amount of choice and variety, and especially if you I always go back to what I think we're physically programmed to want, and the fact of the matter is that being obese takes longer to kill you than starving. So our bodies are going to fight for that, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it is.
That's good. That's good. That's true though, too.
Yeah. I really think of it as this, like, that I am constantly in a battle with my baser needs that are going, like, for the purposes of posterity, we're going to get you fat. You know, you're going to get through the procreation zone, whatever that is. And who cares if you die after that? But I
care. That's exactly right, though. But yeah, you're right.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
And there's no way that your reptilian mind could possibly know that almost no one in the United States is in danger of starving to death, and 50% of the population is in danger of dying prematurely from eating badly. So, yeah. And you're right. Your body only cares that you make it until you're 35 anyway. So
all bets are off after that. It doesn't care. You know, even going to the gym, I'm trying to think about this as analytically and rationally as possible. And I'm telling my body, this is what we have to do to survive. My body doesn't know I'm not out, like, wrestling lions. It doesn't know. There's no difference for it. Or I'm out harvesting food or what it might be.
Right.
Amazing. Well, I can't wait to listen to your podcast. What are some things that you have as suggestions? And I know we've gone over them in broad strokes, but because there was a point where I had no idea, you know, I just thought, like, and I was kind of sold on a number of different things that I wasn't super successful at, which were, like, number one, just eat 500 calories a day for 2 months and then you're fixed, or eat in ketosis and then you never have to think about anything else, or these kind of things. But I really appreciate what you're saying, that it is individual. So within that framework, what are some kind of broad ideas for people?
I mean, honestly, I think it's so simple, because if you say to someone, if you use the phrase good diet, almost everybody knows the same images come into almost everyone's mind. And it really is, I'm not saying this is not how you do it, but what you do is you eat more food from the plant kingdom, you eat less junk food, and you eat less pure animal products. And that's the first step. And then the second step is to say, well, what precisely are you eating? Because as you said, and as I said, I guess, vegan food can be junk food. So then you look at those foods from the plant world that you're eating, and you say, am I eating the right way? But when I say everybody has to figure it out for themselves, I think I mean everybody needs to figure out how to do it themselves, what their day-to-day life looks like. But the fundamental rules, I mean, for 95, maybe more, percentage of humans, the fundamental rules are the same rules, that when they're basically eat as many foods from the plant kingdom in as close to natural form as you can and minimize everything else, especially junk food. I think for most people, the closer you can come to eliminating junk food from your life, the better off you are. Now, that's a tall order. It's really hard for people. But if every time you, you know, if every time you craved a Coke, you had a glass of water, and if every time you craved a cheeseburger, you had an apple, I mean, you'd be in unbelievably good, or even four apples, you'd be in unbelievably good shape.
Yeah, it does become unbelievably complicated. I had a buddy who was woefully addicted to soda, and when I got really into it with him, he literally said to me that it was cheaper to buy this like off-brand 2-liter bottles of soda than it was for him to buy water, and he didn't want to drink tap water.
Right.
I was shocked by this, you know, and we've always had, you know, water delivery plus water filtration systems on all the spigots of our house. And so I just never even considered that that could be a possibility of just the accessibility to clean water in that way, which is shocking. And then you can look at even some bottled water has multiple ingredients, like, you know, Coke also sells water, and right, it's not right, just water. It's got other right stuff in it.
Well, the so-called vitamin water and so-called smart water, more good examples of a good food turned bad in a way. Yeah, you want to keep things simple, and you want to keep things, I really, if you had your druthers, you'd want to eat food that didn't exist, only food that did exist 100 years ago. You don't want to eat anything that's been invented in the last 100 years.
Right. And I like imagining Coke in its purest form, you know, 7 ounces, you got it maybe twice a year. You know, this to me is the way Coke should be had. And I bet when you had it, it was a magical experience.
Yeah, I mean, even if it's twice a week, but the thing is, on average, I think we were drinking, I think Americans were drinking, maybe still are, 50 gallons a year of sugar sweetened beverages, which is, you know, a quart a day or half a quart a day, a pint a day. And soda consumption is down, but of course, consumption of Gatorade and sweetened waters and Snapple and all of that stuff is up. So the consumption of sugar hasn't gone down at all. And sugar sweetened beverages is still a major source of it.
Yeah. Oh man, it really does become, it feels overwhelming in those yeah terms, you know.
Yeah, it's challenging for sure.
But I bet that for people who have certainly weight loss goals or health goals, just eliminating that is a great first step, you know.
Yeah, eliminating junk food. I mean, eliminating sodas for a lot of people is the first step, but junk food in general. And then finally packaged food, I think, is sort of the third step. I mean, ideally people would shop and cook for themselves. Obviously not everybody can do that. So we need to figure out a way that it's as easy for people to eat good food as it is for people to eat bad food. We've really, the government and the industry has really made it easy as can be to eat food that's bad for us. And it could have gone a different direction, but it didn't.
Yeah, the convenience is a big thing. I think another thing that I've found helpful is when it did become important enough to me, the act of taking a Sunday afternoon and spending a few hours and making my food for the majority of the week was really massively helpful, because I was able then, I find that when I'm hungry, I make decisions that are not as beneficial to my life as when I'm sated or full. And even like going grocery shopping, I won't do that hungry, because stuff just appears in my shopping cart that I wouldn't have otherwise put in there, you know? And so this act of taking a few hours Sunday, and then you find ways to streamline it, you know, so it doesn't take up such a huge part of your time off. But right.
Well, I've spent most of my career, I should send you some cookbooks. I've spent most of my career doing exactly that. And it sounds like you have it figured out, which is great.
I mean, I've been doing this for a while. I've been dieting for 20 years. It's only the last like 5 years that I've gotten to something that I can actually go like, this isn't ruining my life doing this. You know, my life is enhanced.
That's great.
Yeah, but I would love to read your cookbooks. They sound fantastic. Yeah,
I'll send you some stuff. We'll exchange emails after.
Yeah, certainly. Mark, thank you so much. I look forward to listening to your podcast. I read that you had Tom Colicchio on, and I'm a huge admirer of his. So I'm
that
for
was
sure
a good interview
to
too. Yeah, he's great. It was really good. The Moby thing. We had a lot of fun. Yeah, we had a lot of fun. And I think the second season we're going to start in the fall, have some thoughts about how to make it better. I mean, you've been doing this long enough to know that you can always figure out a way to tweak it and make it better. So we're going to keep moving forward, I think.
For sure.
Thank you for having me on.
Mark, I appreciate it very much. I'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. And now for the Q&A.
Well, we've got a question here from Joe.
Hi, Joe.
Joe, hold on. I need a second.
Joe, we answered your question already, and I'm a moron and didn't press record.
Yeah.
So I'm very sorry.
Well, you're going to get an answer, Joe.
Yeah, we're going to do it again. It's probably not going to be as good as the last one.
Maybe it'll be better. Let's try it. So right. Joe asks, first he says, I'm new to your personal story. God bless you, Ethan. I was shocked to learn you were the same guy that I knew from so many great movies. I'm a huge fan on both counts.
Thank you, Joe.
Your podcast taught me maintenance. Yay, I knew you'd like that. This idea... See, now I have the giggles. Sorry, Joe. Okay, so he says, this idea helps me stay the course without feeling defeated. I'm age 53, 5'10", 256 pounds, down from 291.
Nice.
My whole childhood, I was too skinny and I ate anything. And I never changed the eating, so I've struggled with obesity in adult life. I'm kind of in your bike phase, trying to cut weight through force of will. I figured I'd cut first to get the weight off my body as a step one. My goal for 2021 is to get under 200 pounds. I count walking miles, daily food calories, and measure success on the scale. But after your recent episode about building muscle, I'm starting to understand there's more nuance. It's not just a number. My question is, can you share some insight on how to add healthy muscle to the routine in a more sustainable way? Moreover, could I rethink weight as the ultimate goal? If so, what metric would I use to measure success?
Yes. So, like, I get really hung up on the numbers, too, because in total fairness and honesty, I believe right now I'm still obese, like, as far as the BMI goes.
Really?
I think so. At least overweight.
Okay.
I'm certainly overweight. And so... You know, I have very clean blood. I have a low resting heart rate. I'm not hypertensive. Like, the health markers are good. But as far as the BMI goes, I'm too heavy. I don't really give a shit about the number anymore. I want a low body fat percentage, and I want to, you know, not wheeze walking upstairs. And like, these are the things I want I don't know what to tell you to have as a goal, but you could have like a pant size as a goal. You could have a certain visible muscle as a goal. You could have a health marker as a goal. Whatever your goal is your goal. If it's a number, then it's a number, but the numbers, don't have to be the be all end all. In my opinion.
So those can be other metrics for success, which you've talked about before. What are your goals? Are you meeting those goals? So yeah, like a pant size or how you feel in your clothes, or as you said, in your case, getting up the stairs without breathing heavy and that you have good blood and all that.
Yeah. And I think even doctors that I've talked to have said, like, for very athletic people that this, the BMI doesn't matter. The BMI is very general, and if you put on, it doesn't account for excess muscle. So it's only looking at, it's typically looking at being fat, and I don't fall into that category anymore because my body fat percentage is very low.
Okay.
So the numbers for me, the numbers are kind of irrelevant. If I match my numbers up against another dude who's 6'1" and, roughly the same bone structure as me, I might be really bummed out because his number is lower than mine. You know, it's very similar to lifting weights. I see a lot of people in the gym that are very hyper-focused on lifting really heavy things. And now I say that, and there would be people that would look at what I was lifting and go, that's super heavy. But I don't really care about what the number is that I'm lifting. All I care about is, like, am I getting it into an 8 to 12 rep range? You know, that's like, if I can lift something 20 times, it's too light. If I can only lift it 6, it's too heavy. If I can get it 8 to 12 times, then that's the weight I'm lifting. And so whatever that is, I want it to go up a little bit over time, but I don't really care that it's, I'm not aiming for it to be 500 pounds. Like, I don't care about that. So the number for me is irrelevant with that too. It's just what's useful for my body.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So for that part of his question.
Yeah. So I do look at the scale, but the scale is like, if I'm maintaining, I want to see that I'm maintaining. And even that I struggle with because I secretly or I subconsciously want to see that it's going down. And I have to talk myself through this. If I'm trying to cut fat and like have, revealed obliques, I want to see that the number is going down because that's my intention. I'm eating in order for that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But the number itself is somewhat irrelevant.
Yeah.
I say that and then I imagine there's probably people where it becomes a thing where it's like you're now a bodybuilder and you weigh 350 pounds and your heart is really struggling because of that. And then let's talk about the number. But for me, weight loss is no longer about hitting some number. I could sit down with Jared Feather, who trains me, and go, I really want to reveal my obliques. About how much weight do you think I have to lose in order for that to happen? And then have some target. But I never have those kind of conversations with him.
Yeah. Okay. And then the other part of what Joe wanted to ask is like, okay, cool. He's cutting, and he's going towards this number. We understand that doesn't necessarily have to be his only measure of success.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to take it away from him.
No,
it
I
could
know.
Be.
No,
he asked for ancillary potential goals.
100%. He just says, also, can you share some insight on how to add healthy muscle to the routine in a more sustainable way?
Yeah.
It's kind of two questions, Joe, but we like you.
Yeah. I would suspect, Joe, that you probably have more muscle than the average guy who's your height and your age, simply because you're carrying around more weight and we're spending time in an eating surplus, which creates muscle. So if you're interested in weight loss or fat loss specifically, then doing resistance training will hold on to and perhaps build a little bit of more muscle. And so just look into lifting weights.
Okay. Great.
Yeah.
Perfect.
A couple days a week doesn't take a lot.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. If you have a question that you'd like answered on the podcast, please email it to us at americanglutton.net.
Thanks for listening to this episode of American Glutton. I'm Ethan Suplee, and as always, joined by my chaperone, Paige Dorian. Follow us on Instagram at American Glutton Podcast. Sincerely.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.